You're listening to Real Talk, sponsored by Marcus Werenberg Theaters. I'm Colin Ritter.
And I'm Peter Lewis.
And in today's episode, we return to our special series, The Decades. And today, we are visiting the 1970s.
Considered by many to be the best decade for film.
Yeah.
And not going to lie, just reading these lists, I can't help but just not agree more with that assumption.
Without a doubt. I mean, so many good movies coming out in the 1970s, and I think we can both agree that some of our favorite movies of all time definitely came out of this decade. So it's a lot to work with.
Absolutely, and just a background, this is the decade Hollywood needed, because towards the end of the 60s, you know, a lot of changes happened in the industry.
Yeah.
Movies weren't as financially successful as they had originally hoped for, so, you know, this is the decade Hollywood needed to really just rebound.
Yeah, this was like the big resurgence, you know, and this was the building block for what we talked about in our last episode, the 1980s. This was really what put the momentum of the 80s in motion. This is what started this resurgence of American cinema, and kind of, as you mentioned, the financially profitable aspect of American cinema.
I'd say it's the best balance of escapism meets artfully crafted films
without a
that
doubt.
There probably has ever been, because you have, in this decade, a lot of some of the best films of all time ever made and some of the most classic remembered films
of
all
time. Oh, without a doubt. No doubt about it. So today for our episode, we, much like our last episode, we have put together a top three list for each of us, as well as a list of the best of the rest. So we can kind of just briefly talk about, you know, some of our favorites and others that, you know, maybe in our top 10, but just didn't make our top three. So
absolutely.
A lot of fun stuff to talk about. So I say we just get things started. What do you say?
Yeah, might as well, like, do it again.
Might as well. Let's start with you, Peter. So what is your number three favorite film from the 1970s?
Well, I have two films right here. I have to choose. I'm going to say Rocky.
Really? Really?
I put that ahead of Halloween, one of my favorite films of all time. But what I love about Rocky is, I know people always say Raging Bull is the best sports movie or boxing movie ever made, and I get the point, but I think Rocky was just so relatable in a lot of ways. This is probably the best role Sylvester Stallone has ever had.
Oh, without a doubt.
I mean, it's not too hard to say that if you've seen his filmography. But you know what? the work he put in this film, the people he had with him, this was, again, it reminds me in a way of Kevin Smith's Clerks.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to in the 90s. I'm pretty sure I'll have that on my list somewhere.
Oh, for sure.
But it was just this, you know, basically a ragtag crew, not much support, and, you know, they make what I consider to be one of the best films of all time.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about, and, you know, have some of the best characters, you know, of course, Rocky, Apollo Creed, just this wonderful cast. They all come together. It just works. That's my big thing.
Yeah, I agree. Rocky, good choice, but I think I would have chosen Halloween over Rocky, but, you know, that's your choice.
Again, I was just juggling with those two films, what I love more. But what I think put Rocky over for me was, I'm always amazed with, you know, going back, you know, they had basically nothing to work with for the most part. They had to, you know, keep running, you know, ducking unions basically in Philadelphia to film this film.
Yeah.
And they make this like huge main event fight believable with basically nothing.
Yeah.
Like they had to, like, they played with the cameras well. And I think that's what I respect so much. That they made the story believable with literally nothing to go on.
Yeah. And I mean, that's always a good thing to have, especially in filmmaking. And in a genre like this where creativity is kind of expressed more so than it had been in a very long time. So, kind of as you're mentioning, heightening things like that is definitely always good for the screen. And that goes without saying. But it's, as you mentioned, yeah, it's definitely shown here in this movie.
And I'm a fan of, you know, the endings that, you know, don't end as you would expect. You would think, you know, oh, Rocky, the underdog, would come and win this fight. He doesn't. Apollo Creed
exactly.
wins this fight, and they have a great moment with it, and it's believable. That's what's great.
Something that Hollywood kind of refuses to do now, and that's end a movie, I don't want to say on a sad note, because I wouldn't say that Rocky ends on a sad note, but in a different way than you expect, because now we kind of glorify this idea of protagonists always coming out on top in the end. And this is a good example of that not happening, really, if you think about the fight as a whole, you know.
And it set up a, I think, a quality franchise if you exclude Rocky V and parts of Rocky IV. I would argue that. I think it's one of the most consistent franchises that Hollywood's made.
Yeah, fair enough.
Mr. Colin, what is your number three in the 70s?
My number three movie is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein from 1974. Mel Brooks, I think, is one of the brightest minds to not only work in American cinema, but in American theater as well. Just a genius. Genius writer, genius comedian, genius storyteller. And I think it really shows in this movie. You've seen Young Frankenstein,
oh, absolutely.
Right? I think it's one of the funniest movies of all time. And it's just so much fun. It's one of those movies my dad showed me as a kid. And I saw it very young, probably younger than I should have been when I saw it for the first time. But I love it. You know, it's one of those things that's kind of stuck with me. It's almost a nostalgia factor. I love it so much. Just the different ways the story is told. So you have this sort of black and white idea, kind of depicting monster movies of the past. But at the same time, while trying to keep this serious nature, it's a complete parody. Every part about it is a complete parody, but at the same time, you do fall in love with these characters and start to go with them on their journey. And the cast, I mean, obviously, the cast and crew, as mentioned, Mel Brooks, but Gene Wilder, one of my favorite performers and actors of all time. I think it just comes together for, as I mentioned, one of the best movies ever made.
One of the most important things for comedy in general is to have timing.
Yeah.
I think that's what Mel Brooks was so good at.
Oh, without
a doubt.
He knew
when to, you know, put a joke in, when to have one of those moments in there, and this film shows it. It's just, you know, funny to think what parody is nowadays. It's just mishmash of like the most popular films, and like nothing makes sense.
Yeah.
And this film,
Siri started talking. Anyways, keep
always
going.
Happens. But yeah, there's this whole idea that they focus on basically one film, and they every now and then discuss, you know, issues, I would guess, in filmmaking up until that point. But again, it was clearly focused on the film Frankenstein.
Yeah,
that was its sole focus. And I think it parodied it pretty well.
And, you know, really, all of Mel Brooks' films do that. I mean, Blazing Saddles, that's another movie from the 70s. You know, it comes close to crossing some lines, but it's one of the funniest movies I can imagine. I mean, he's just a genius. And the thing about Mel Brooks is he mocks things and tells jokes and makes light of, and a lot of times, some very serious issues. But he does it in such a loving way that it just works. It just works. It really does, you know?
I mean, that's all you can really say. He understood what comedy was, especially for the 70s when, you know, again, this decade was a lot about drama and, you know, not too much comedy, I would argue, coming out of the 70s. But again, this is, I would absolutely agree that you have to put that up there because it was one of the few to, like, really shine.
Oh, yeah, and still today we're watching it. You know, it's still on shelves everywhere today. Moving on. Peter, what is your number two movie from the 70s?
Close Encounters of the Third Kind from your boy.
From my boy, Steven Spielberg. Good choice. Admittedly, not on my top three, but great choice.
I just remember the first time I saw it and how interesting it was. Because up until then, you know, my experience with sci-fi, especially with, you know, aliens coming to Earth, was, you know, always so repetitive, you know, somewhat cliched. This was more focused on the idea of getting to, you know, meeting the, you know, Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah.
Like, you really don't see the aliens until the end of their ship. It's just, you know, this very good story of, you know, this just random guy figuring out that there's something coming, and, you know, it's just a great adventure, really.
Oh, it is a great adventure, and this is another movie that I remember watching as a kid with my dad. Again, another reason I'm so in love with sci-fi as a whole. It's just, I mean, if you're a nerd like we are, this is, like, the quintessential nerd movie to get you into the genre of sci-fi, because not only, I mean, it's suspenseful and it's fun and it's an adventure. And again, it's just something that we don't really see a whole lot today in filmmaking.
It's so intelligent.
It really is.
And you don't see this a lot where, you know, you would think to have a science fiction film, you have to constantly have, you know, something with aliens. Like, you got to get to the point right away or somewhat down the road. They don't do it till really the end. It's just, what's going on? What's the deal with all this strange stuff going around? And again, it just builds this very good road to this major climax of the film.
Yeah.
And I think that's so rare to see, especially if, you know, again, science fiction, you know, they always want you to have what you came for immediately. And this film says, no, you're going to wait because there's a big point to all this.
Yeah, exactly. It's something we talk about, you know, fairly often. The story is much deeper than what it seems just from the outside. It's one of those movies where you have to give it more than one screening. You have to watch it a couple times to start to get the underlying meanings that are kind of existing throughout the entire movie. And I think that's fun when you can do that with the movie.
And again, you know, I'll have to include, you know, the good cast, the good screenwriting, all that stuff. But just in general, a story that I don't think can really be replicated.
Oh, I agree.
I think it was just too intelligent. I mean, again, 70s intelligent filmmaking all around.
Yeah.
And I would personally argue this was probably one of the best.
Yeah, I agree completely. That's a good choice.
All right, Mr. Collin, your number two?
My number two, also by my boy Steven Spielberg. Again, another one of my favorite movies of all time. You know, it's funny. Every time we talk about the 70s and 80s, it ends up being all of our favorite movies of all time. So we're kind of giving away a lot of our top 10 episode that'll be coming up. But that's for another time. So my number two from the 1970s is Jaws. One of the movies that really kind of made Steven Spielberg. It kind of put him on his pedestal. And gosh, it's just a fun movie. This is a movie I can watch over and over and over again and never get tired of it.
I mean, just like make a connection to Rocky, you know, again, the first of their kind. And it just launched, you know, a career of basically somebody who's notorious with filmmaking.
Yeah. And it's become the standard for summer films. You know, we talk about summer blockbusters, you know, in our past episode, we kind of hinted at the summer blockbusters that are coming up.
Born in the 70s.
Exactly.
And this is basically the one everybody says. And of course it was, because, you know, you read the stories like, this was in theaters, for over a year.
Oh, which is incredible.
For a long time, it was just, you know, again, people around the block waiting to see this movie.
Yeah. And you're right. This kind of built this idea of summer blockbuster films. I mean, this is a great mix of some of my favorite elements of cinematic storytelling. You have suspense, which, you know, I love suspense so much. A big reason why I love Alfred Hitchcock. You have suspension of disbelief and escapism, in a sense, because you have this, you know, this monstro giant shark that's terrorizing. I mean, it's so trivial if you think about it. A shark is terrorizing a town, which seems crazy, but that's what makes it great. That's what makes this movie so much fun. And that's what makes a lot of the 70s movies fun, is because 70s movies fun, rather, is because they're so out there and they're so over the top. And this is another movie that does just that. And a big reason I'm in love with it. And I love the theme, you know, this beachside town. It's just fun.
And again, just, you know, going back to, you know, the famous story from behind the scenes was, you know, they couldn't get the shark to work.
Exactly.
At all.
Yeah.
And you would think that would, you know, ruin the film, but what Spielberg did, which I think is genius, is he used that to his advantage of, you know, it's like, well, we can't have the shark all the time, but when we can have it, we can just up the horror.
Yeah.
And that's what was so great, because, you know, again, most of the film, you don't see the shark except in very specific moments to build up, you know, the tension and the scares.
Yeah.
Everything else is basically building a story and characters.
Yeah.
So when, you know, you get this crew going out to, you know, kill the shark at the end of the movie, you feel something.
Exactly.
Where most films, it's like, you know, if Jaws was made today, you would see the shark, of course, every 10 minutes.
Every 10, yeah.
It would
and
be
probably very pathetic CGI, but anyways.
Oh, yeah. Most likely. Again, it's just, you know, back to Rocky, you know, shoestring budget, a lot of problems, but you know what they did? They made it work.
Exactly. And I think those constraints make the storytelling better, because they can't rely on technology and they can't rely on all these other tools to make the movie the quote-unquote best it can be. They really have to rely on good storytelling. And speaking of characters, some of the best characters, I think, in any movie, in this film in particular, one of the best monologues from a character on his boat, I think, of any movie of all time. I think that's, as a matter of fact, my freshman year, that monologue was used in a rhetoric class to kind of convey this art of, you know, suspenseful storytelling in movies. Just all around beautifully done from a very young, very, very young director, Steven Spielberg. As mentioned, this was kind of his big shot. He was just, in a sense, this unknown guy who was given a chance to do this movie, and it obviously worked out in his favor, because now he's one of the most successful directors and producers in Hollywood history.
I usually don't, you know, judge a film based on, you know, the behind the scenes, but rarely, especially in a film like this, you have to say, you have to take what they went through into account.
Yeah.
Because again, you know, most filmmakers would be like, well, we can't get this one thing working. We have to make it work. It's like, well, like I said, it's not working here, so let's get around it.
Exactly.
Again, I think just that creativity and, you know, basically, you know, going on the whim makes a great film and filmmaker.
And you're right. And that, what a lot of people don't realize is, you know, think back, you don't have the same technology you have now. So a lot, you know, when you see water in the movie, they're in water. This is either shot on, you know, the back lot of the Universal sound stages in California or on the ocean. I mean, you have real elements. You know, they tell stories of having to time shots just perfectly so you don't get other boats in the background.
That's one of my favorite things.
Isn't that great?
They had to, you know, make that scene where they are truly all on the water, but they only had this 10-minute frame most of the time to, you know, have nothing in the background where they were filming. And that, again, it's, in a way you could say, well, that'd be bad because it's rushed, but no, you know, it's a whole cast, it's a whole company in this film coming together and saying, okay, we got
to
do it.
We have to do it.
And we got
to
do it like this.
That's right.
And I think that's incredible. Again, especially for a film where, you know, most of these guys aren't making a lot of money.
Exactly.
But again, they know what they're doing, but they have a good idea of what they're making is going to be good, and they commit to it.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Great movie. Now, moving on.
Well, before we get to our, well, of course, our number ones are tied. I think most people know what it is.
Yeah, we have the same number one, but we'll get there.
So, Colin, the best of the rest?
The best of the rest. There was a lot of good movies in the 1970s. What are some of your honorable mentions that didn't make your top three?
Pretty sure I mentioned Halloween earlier over choosing it over Rocky for me. I don't even know how many times I said this on the show, but it's my favorite horror film of all time. I think it has to be one of the best films
without a doubt.
All time, just for, you know, atmosphere, tension, character, story. It's just all around. And again, I guess recurring theme of the 70s, I'm guessing, is people with, you know, not a lot of resources at their hand.
Yeah, shoestring
making
budgets.
Some of the best films of all time.
You're right. I mean, just so many good movies that have become so iconic. As you mentioned, Halloween, we have The Exorcist, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, we have Salem's Lot, which is another one of my favorite movies. Just a lot of good movies.
I think the last decade for legitimate horror, because we talked about the 80s, you had the slasher genre, and, you know, it's fun watch if you're sick,
yeah,
like me, but they don't really scare you.
Yeah.
These are films that, you know, are genuinely have, you know, terrifying moments that keep you thinking.
Oh, without a
Maybe
doubt.
Maybe not, like, up all night, you know, with the lights on, but it's like,
I don't know. Salem's Lot used to scare me to death as a kid.
Same with Halloween.
Oh, absolutely.
But now watching, it's like, the overall point of, like, huh, what if there is some guy like out there?
Yeah. Well, that's like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Even still today, that thought is terrifying, you know? And they do such a great job, just like The Exorcist, terrifying. Mm-hmm. And these movies did such a great job of truly, you know, just terrifying you, and something we don't really see a whole lot of today.
Absolutely. And, you know, getting into some of these higher art films, of course, The Godfather, Part 1 and 2. I mean, can you even... It's almost a shame I didn't put one of those on my top three, because those are absolutely... should be in the top 10 of all-time greatest films.
Yeah, that's true.
I would go on record and say Godfather is the greatest film ever made.
Yeah.
I mean, just the way they told that story, the way they made it believable, it was a little heavily romanticized at times, I would admit, but I think that's what worked to its advantage.
Well, yeah, it worked, without a doubt.
And again, there's also...
Alien.
Yeah.
Gosh, I love Alien. That's another great 70s movie. Just so much to work with, but that's the beauty of it. In the 70s... much like the 80s, we have this resurgence of storytelling that's raw,
mm-hmm.
and it's new. Something we, honestly, and we say it a lot, we don't see a whole lot now. You have a lot of new stories being told and dreamed up and imagined that, regardless of the budget, regardless of the resources and tools you have, if you stick to your story, you stick to your idea, and you're dedicated to that, you can create something that's incredible. And that's what we see time and time again throughout the 1970s, more so than any other decade. I mean, aside from the 80s, I think more so than any other decade.
You know, going off with aliens, you know, something you also think we've talked about in this episode with the 70s was people knowing when to show the big thing that you're waiting for. Like an alien, you know, you don't see the creature until basically the very end. There's a lot of hints of it.
Oh, yeah.
But again, they build up to it.
Yeah.
And I think that's great because, you know, I'm a fan of characters and character development. That's one of the most important things in a film for me.
Yeah.
And again, story development, it's all those things where there's that, I don't want to say gimmick, that's the only word I can think of at this very moment. But again, it's they're building up to the big reveal of what you're expecting.
You're exactly right.
And the whole time you're like, when you actually get to it, you care about it because, again, they've built up this great story and characters that you want to get behind.
Yeah. And by the time it's there, it works. It works so well. And it's, and I mean, Alien, for instance, is terrifying, and you love it, and I say it a lot, but it works. It just works. And
absolutely.
Again, Hollywood, if you're listening, we need more of this today. We need more of that originality, and stories just need to be told, I guess, more artfully, because these, regardless, look at Alien, look at The Exorcist, look at Jaws, Look at any of the movies we've mentioned today. They're so artfully done, regardless of the genre, regardless of the type of movie it is. They're so artfully done. It's the people behind them, the cast and the crew. They knew exactly what they were doing, and they knew exactly where they wanted to go.
Again, you can even do this with escapism. Not everything has to be, you know, this Oscar-winning film. You can entertain people. But again, that's what films like, you know, Mad Max, Saturday Night Fever, in some regards, you know, you're there for the entertainment value of, you know, action and, you know, just the disco going around at the
exactly.
time. Exactly. But again, they build something great around it.
Mm-hmm.
And going off on what you said about, you know, just better films in general, probably one of the best, I would say, again, from the 70s, Apocalypse Now.
Oh, yes. Apocalypse Now, yep.
It's, if you can make it through it, it's a long film and it feels long.
It feels long.
But everything in there means something, and it's just such a, it's an adventure.
Yeah, it is an adventure.
It truly is an adventure, and that's what, you know, they set out to make, and I think they hit the nail right on the head.
And speaking of adventure, I guess we should get to this, our number one favorite film. And we can just say this together because we both share the number one favorite film of the 70s, probably one of the best adventures ever told.
Again, if you saw the music at the beginning, you probably know what it is.
It's Star Wars.
Of course.
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, what else could be the number one movie from the 1970s?
I mean, I think we said in the 80s episode and probably in past episodes, it's the film that changed cinema.
It did, and it's a film that, like, changed me as a kid. I'm like, gosh, this is amazing. I love it so much. And again, I'm a huge nerd, so that doesn't, may not matter to everyone else, but I know that you can agree while you wear your Star Wars shirt right
Absolutely.
Now.
And again, just going off on the theme, I think we've found out about the 70s. I didn't even think of it before coming in, but when we started talking about it, again, it's hard to say $18 million was a shoestring budget, especially in, you know, 1977. I think it was $18 million. But again, like, not a lot of support from the studio. They just looked at the script and said, what on earth is George Lucas making here?
Yeah.
And again, this is after his famous student film, THX 1138, and of course, American Graffiti.
Something
you could absolutely have put on this list and talked in great detail. But
yeah,
just this filmmaker who had a good vision and told one of the smartest, simplest stories.
Yeah.
Because there's so much, you know, that opening shot, I think I've said in the past, establishes so much
without a doubt.
Whole story. You know, it tells you the story of the rebels, the Empire, how big they are, how strong they are, what the situation is.
Yeah.
You have no idea what's going on. You're just thrown right into this war zone, basically, that you don't know what the deal is, but you have an idea of what's going on.
And then goes on to create perhaps one of the most famous and recognizable franchises of all time.
One of the greatest accidents, I would say, filmmaking history, because I think they all knew they were just making... In some ways, a kid's film, I think, was most of... George Lucas always talked about how hard it was to get people who were behind the scenes to film because, you know, they were like, this is just a dumb kid's movie.
Yeah.
But again, it turned out to be...
Guess they were wrong.
One of the best.
Speaking of George Lucas, yesterday, I believe, was his birthday.
Yep.
So, George, if you're listening, which we're sure you're not, happy birthday.
Please make another Star Wars film. We need you.
Come back.
Your new overlords are terrible.
But, you know what? What can you do? At least Star Wars is still there, right?
Absolutely.
I mean... That's the thing, though. What else do we even say about it? I mean, we could talk for 2 hours about how much we love Star Wars, but we have another summer series
hint,
that we're going to stick to that.
But again, what can you say that's not been said
exactly.
about Star Wars? It's considered one of the best, especially in this decade, for a reason.
Yeah.
Because I think it changed how we think about film, how we make film,
how we develop characters, too.
Absolutely.
I mean, you just, if you think about it, can you think of any other movie, just specifically talking about Star Wars, you know, Episode 4, A New Hope. Can you think of any other movie where you fall in love with the characters, you know, that much, that quickly? Because I can't. My gosh, I mean, honestly, and I know this is going to be kind of out there for some people, the only other movie I can think of came much, much, much later is Harry Potter. But then again, I was a huge Harry Potter fan, so I think that's the only thing that's really as close to that. And again, we're talking about two very large franchises that go on for multiple movies, and I technically are still being developed today, if you consider Fantastic Beasts part of that franchise, which technically it is. But just that level of depth and that level of love you can develop for those characters is incredible, and especially for the 1970s, as mentioned, coming from the 60s, where we see a great decline in good storytelling and good character development. This was incredible. And if you love the sci-fi genre already, this was your mecca.
Oh, yeah. 70s is basically where science fiction won. You can say, of course, it won in the 80s, but again, that was more on a simplistic level. Here, it won on just an artistic level. I mean, we talked about Star Wars, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Alien. You know, these are some of the smartest films ever made, and they were made in a genre that before people just thought were, you know, like the cheesy B movie, midnight movie type.
Yeah, exactly right.
Again, it's just, you know, if you have a good idea, you can push it forward.
Yeah, if you stick with it and you stay dedicated to it. And that's exactly what Lucas did. I mean, look now. We're in 2017. We have another Star Wars movie coming out in a few months.
We're going to have one every year now.
Every year. Still don't know how I feel about that. But again, that's for the other summer series. So be sure to check that out.
I guess just in general, I mean, it's, I think it was the last smart decade we ever had.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a shame because I can't see us getting back to that point, especially just, you know, in the state of filmmaking.
Yeah.
I think it's the last time we had, you know, people actually saying, let's make a film.
Yeah.
And let's do something with
aside
it.
Aside from the 80s, you know.
Absolutely.
Well, that's the 70s. You know, aside from here, we still have the 90s to talk about. We have the 60s, the golden age, and then the birth of film. So, you know, I think now is when we're really going to start seeing these filmmaking styles change, because we have the 70s and 80s out of the way now. We have these big revival, resurgence eras
going. We have
going.
The most obvious ones to
exactly.
go off on. Because now, I mean, you know, 60s, you know, like you said, quality not necessarily going down the drain. It's just, you know, film, people weren't wanting to see film. That it was harder to get, you know, financial support or big numbers.
You're right.
And again, you know, that's what the 70s and 80s changed for, you know, maybe better or worse in the long run. But again, you know, I think that we got the biggest two to start with, because now we can have some real fun with, you know, 90s.
Oh, yeah, 60s. 90s is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
So you guys don't want to miss that, of course, as always. Anything else to say on the 70s before we close this episode out?
I think, like we've said, the last good decade, I would absolutely argue that. And again, the decade where, you know, again, with the state of Hollywood, not a lot to go off on, but you know what? That pushed storytelling.
Yep. And that's why we have the great movies that we have today to look back on and to buy for $5 in a bin at a department store or a shopping center, which is a shame. When I see Jaws in a bin for $5, it makes my heart hurt.
I would still pay $15.
I know, right? You'd still pay full price. But I guess we're different. So, as always, folks, be sure to check us out on iTunes, the Google Play Store, let's see, krcu.org, on Facebook at KRCU's Facebook page. You can see what's not only going on with us here at Real Talk, but at the station as a whole. So that's always an important tool. Go ahead and go to Facebook and like KRCU's Facebook page. So until next time, and for Real Talk, I'm Colin Ritter.
And I'm Peter Lewis.
We'll see you at the movies.